possible with Kinnison, praying his family would escape the clutches of the Lord Baron. But Kinnison had outmaneuvered him once more, and with his family under guard back on Maturo Island, Lastman had no choice but to do the Baron's dirty work yet again. He had no idea why he was chosen for this task. The healer knew next to nothing about the sea, and even less about the steam-powered boats called PTs by the Sekhmen who rowed them, and PT boats by everybody else. Rebuilt from the wreckage of some pre-dark navy, the craft moved faster than arrows and carried enough weaponry and blasters to level a small vill. No pirate ship would dare to approach one of the deadly boats. Even the huge four-mast windjammers that carried dozens of black powder cannons. The Sekhmen who served as crew on the vessels were fiercely proud of their status and wore facial tattoos to show their rank and boat. Once you were made crew, you were crew for life. And the sailors feared nothing but the wrath of their master and the Deepers, the terrible muties that lived in the cold depths of the limitless ocean and rose only after the worst storms to devour anything they could find. The sea muties were the main reason nobody tried to sail out of the archipelago and reach the mainland anymore. As soon as any vessel sailed past the last island of the Scythic chain, the currents forced it back, and then the Deepers attacked, dragging the vessels down whole into the sea. Volcanoes, hurricanes, pirates, slavers, and Kinnison. This hellish prison was the extent of their world, as sure as if there were solid granite walls sealing the people inside. Dripping with spray, Glassman ran a finger around the stiff collar of his new uniform, trying to get more comfortable. As befitting his rank of captain, Glassman wore loose gray clothing and woven sandals that were easy to kick off if a man went overboard. Heavy boots could drag a sailor into the cold embrace of Davy faster than a knife to the neck. Around his waist was a wide leather belt with a flintlock sitting in a holster smack in the middle of his stomach and a machete slung just below his armpit. The rest of the crew was dressed the same, except for the pilot, Sergeant Campbell. He alone carried a pre-dark revolver. It was blatantly obvious he was the jailer assigned to watch over the healer, and to assure his obedience.
How far to the next island?
The man at the wheel started to reply, when the aft engine cut loose with a long, loud blast of its steam whistle to equalize pressure. Some of the oldsters said that back in the pre-dark days there was something called a relief switch that could keep a boiler from exploding from too much pressure. But that tech was lost, and the whistle was sounded regularly to keep the machine functioning.
About 50 miles. Say another hour, sir.
Thank you, Sergeant.
Glassman suddenly reached out to grab hold of the dashboard as the boat lurched. Alongside the pilot was an empty chair, bolted to the deck, and his to use whenever he wished. But it seemed using it was something only a landlubber would do, and would greatly decrease his authority over the crew. Swallowing hard, the man fought the roiling sensation in his gut, and tried to rock to the motion of the vessel as it skimmed rapidly over the choppy waters. He had to be the Baron's Sekhmen in every possible way, if his wife and children were to stay this side of the soil. So far, the crew of PT-312 had visited a dozen islands, leaving messages with the local barons about the reward for the capture of the outlander Ryan and his crew of murdering coldhearts. A dozen out of 1,000. This journey to all of the major islands was going to take weeks, if not months, to complete. Some of the larger islands, like Namorik and Alinglapala, supported numerous vills. Most were on the beach, and each of the barons agreed to send runners to the inland vills with the news. On the crescent moon-shaped Oma Atoll, Glassman had found two vills on opposite points of the landmass at war with each other. The healer had his crew use the big 50-caliber machine gun to chill a score of people fighting on the beach. The combat paused, and he relayed the message to the barons and departed, and leaving them to their battle. Lord Baron Kinnison didn't give a spent brass if the vills fought with each other, or much of anything else, as long as they obeyed. Unfortunately, the last baron visited had slyly suggested cleaning up some slaves and pretending they were the strangers to turn them in for the reward. Glassman agreed to the plan, sailed away from the docks, and had the crew blow the entire vill apart with a barrage of firebirds from the main missile pod. Dozens, maybe hundreds, were aced on his command. The healer felt the deaths inside his guts, like hot stones. But there had been no choice. It was either chill strangers, or be dragged back to the dungeon of the Baron to watch his family skinned alive. A sec man called out from the port cannon.
Captain, the waves are cresting white. Is that important?
The sailor stole a glance at the others on the deck of PT-312 before answering, trying to mask a surly smile.
Yes, sir. Means a storm is coming. Maybe we should find a cove to anchor in just in case.
A storm? Glassman glanced at the sky. The heavy clouds rumbled with sheet lightning, as always. He recalled less than a week of clear blue in his whole life. Some of the oldsters said the clear days were coming less often, as if the atmosphere was becoming more polluted with toxic chems and rads. But that was impossible. Sheer nonsense.
What's your opinion, Sarge?
Campbell looked out of the corner of his eyes, trimming their speed.
I know of a small atoll only a few miles to the northwest, Captain. Good harbor. No bills, though.
Which meant no more blood to be spilled, for a while at least.
Take us there. Best speed.
Then, releasing the stanchion, he climbed into the empty chair. Ah, better. He was tired of standing, and if he was supposed to be the goddamn captain, then he could do whatever he wanted, including sitting down.
Aye, sir.
Campbell leaned sideways to shout down a bamboo tube sticking out of the deck.
Engine room! Skipper wants all she's got. We're racing a storm.
Aye, aye, sir.
All of a sudden, the speed of the boat increased noticeably. The healer looked hard at the sergeant. That was the first time he had been called the skipper of the vessel. Briefly, he wondered if by taking the chair, he had just passed some sort of test.
Okay, swabs, batten down the hatches, or do you want to swim home?
Glassman watched as the crew hustled into action, lashing down loose items of equipment, tightening ropes, and covering the machine guns and torpedoes with old plastic sheeting that was heavily patched. Just then, the speeding craft gently rose and fell as something colossal disturbed the water directly under the PD and continued onward, heading directly for the brewing storm on the horizon. The pilot went pale, the crew whispered curses, and Glassman felt clammy, his heart pounding in his chest. They had just sailed past death itself, a sea mutiny. With an effort of will, the captain put the event out of his mind and concentrated on the work at hand. There was nothing to be afraid of. Death was just part of life in the Pacific, and often a welcome release. Pausing, Christie pointed with the barrel of her weapon. Only a few yards away, the form of a woman was sprawled on the filthy soil. Feebly, she raised a hand, struggling to accomplish the action as if her limb weighed 1,000,000 pounds. The ghostly voice whispered once more.
Here! Ryan!
It was a woman, dressed in rags, her body covered with dark, discolored bruises. Her arms were skeleton thin, her cheeks sunken and sallow. On her arm was the brand of a slave. Ryan's blaster pointed directly at her heart.
Who the hell are you?
I was... on Spider Island.
Ryan's scowl deepened, but he moved aside the blaster. There was no way a local slave could know that. Quickly, he dragged the dead man off her legs as Christie knelt on the ground and opened her canteen to trickle some of the tepid water into the woman's mouth. She drank it greedily and sighed in relief.
Been so long. You're really here. Not another dream.
We're real.
Christie brushed aside the tangles of hair covering the woman's face. But the hair was stuck to her skin in spots from the dried residue of sickness.
You were on the Constellation, right?
Drawing a blade and cutting a relatively clean shirt off a dead man, she splashed some more water from her canteen onto the rag and mopped the woman's face clean. The smell from the dead around them was terrible. Most were lying in dried pools of their own vomit and feces. Blinking to focus her eyes, the woman nodded.
I was one of the slaves who refused to join the crew.
When her face was clear of filth, Christie could see the woman was actually a girl about Dean's age. Once she might have been pretty, but the enduring scars of privation had shrunk her features into a gnarled visage. She looked 100 seasons old, Gaia help her. Food and rest might make her strong again, but nothing would remove these scars of hunger.
Part of the crew, eh?
Ryan glanced around them. There was no other movement in sight, nor anybody else who looked familiar.